You're listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. Creative Pep Talk helps you build a thriving creative career. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with Creative Pep Talk and my creative work by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump into today's episode. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out astropad.com to learn more. This episode is also sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one solution for anyone looking to create a beautiful website. Go to squarespace.com and use promo code PEPTALK to get 10% off. Yo, just a little heads up. First of all, this interview is one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done on the show. Definitely probably the deepest interview that I've done. We go really personal, really deep, and I just wanted to give you a few heads up. So first thing is, both Raji and I have ADHD, and I just want to give you a full disclosure. Often when I'm hanging out with other people with ADHD, there's kind of like this supercharge that happens. There's a lot of like just energy back and forth trying to get all this stuff out from both of us. I apologize for some of that, and I hope that it's not too distracting. I don't think it is. I think generally that the conversation is one of the best that we've had on the show. So I think you'll be able to just give me a little grace. I'm trying my absolute hardest on that. But we just got too excited. So mostly I think it's good, but I thought I'd mention that. Also, look out. There is some language for you guys who are listening with kids or whatever. And then also one last thing. I should probably tell you who Raji is. Raji is a designer, illustrator, and developer. This combination of skills and gifts, I think, make him a really, really interesting creative. And I think that all kinds of different creative people will have a lot to take away from his journey and just his kind of vast experience. I think his ability to combine illustration design and web development into one thing means that he is set apart in the industry in a really unique way. You can go see his work at rog.ie. That's his web address, and you can see all of his cool stuff. And then also, he's half of Super Team Deluxe with Justin Mazel, and they make all these enamel pens and patches and super, super nice stuff. So go check that out at superteamdeluxe.com. All right, now let's get to this ridiculous conversation. I wanted to ask you about meds, and I know, man, I feel like this is a sensitive chat, but it's one that I feel like people could get some benefit from. I personally am not on meds, but I have been for a short period of time at one point, and that was kind of a weird roller coaster. I have this really bizarre thing, and my question is, like, I'm worried about having medication because of the way that it could possibly affect my creativity, which is how I pay the bills. And I wonder what your kind of experience has been with that.
Well, I've got not very large. I know some people, I think it's first of all, a good question. I have no shame in telling anything and everything, as great. With typically everything. So yeah. I may overshare on, you know, bathroom time or things like that too. Yeah. My wife was saying yesterday, she's like, you got to stop working from home, man.
like you don't know how to be a regular person.
Yeah.
She's like that.
I'm too. What are you talking about? And she's like, the house cleaners were over yesterday. They said you just barreled out of there. You're singing at the top of your lungs. You barrel up, you leave the bathroom door open, and you're just taking a whiz. Yeah. And there's these two ladies working around.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just like, well, you know, bless them for that.
That is my life as well. And I think I think especially for creative people with any type of disorder or issue or whatever, I think everybody, this is a question I get all the time because I'm pretty open about ADHD. And I've been pretty open about, and actually it's something I'm really sensitive about, the fact that I've told people I'm not on medication because I'm afraid it's going to affect my ideas for the podcast and my illustration and all that stuff. And I pay the bills with that stuff and I don't want to tinker with the formula. And yet that sounds like I'm telling people not to take meds. And that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I'm currently not, that's where I'm at. I don't know. How do you feel about that? Or what's your experience?
Oh, okay. So my experience was like, go back 2 years. I've sort of like never really got diagnosed, never really knew it all along. Yes. Knew it all along.
Right.
My parents were very, they were very Christian. And yes, with that, this specific
I think I'm going to have the same thing. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yes, go.
No, with this, I'm learning very much that like, I can say Christian and that means a lot of different things.
Yeah.
They were a very specific breed of American Christianity where it was like, you trust the Lord to take cure your ailments. And if you're given one, it's your thorn in the flesh. And in non-Christianese, that's just basically like, it's just shit you're supposed to live with. and you're not supposed to try to get outside of that because, you know, that's what you were given. It's a lot of really weird, like, no need to go into that. Really, yeah. What, basically, they never pursued any meds. They never really thought it was a good idea. And they're very sort of like binary thinkers. Like they think of the world as black and white, and that's also informed by their faith. And so what would happen is they would say like, well, meds, you know, you'll turn into a zombie. You know, you'll lose your spirit and you'll cry all day long or whatever. Like they see the most fearful side of it. But I went through a transition where I'd gone through so much that I really wanted to look into this, and I really wanted to. I was going through a lot of other stress in life, and so I just said, like, screw it. I'm gonna look into this. I'm going to get off the rails my parents gave to me, and I'm going to look into this. So the first thing I did was like, well, I don't want to try. Like, I went to a family medicine doctor, and I said, I don't want to try like the full deal, like Ritalin, because I'll probably just end up like, who knows, you know, just frothing
on the streets
yeah, all of your most fearful things.
Yes.
And so this family doctor was like, well, he's like, I'm looking at your abilities. It seems like you have lots of good throughput and it seems like you've been able to adapt pretty well. So I'm not going to do the full big shebang. I'm going to do this anti-anxiety, anti-depression med.
Yeah.
And for anybody that knows anything about ADHD, at times you can take these things and it's almost like they're the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Like they're your brain works in such a way that like it flips around the other way.
Totally.
Yes. And so I had a 3-month period where I was on these meds and I would just break down and sob.
Yeah.
And I was so depressed.
Oh,
I have
gosh.
Never been depressed. And I was so depressed. And I remember calling my wife and just like losing it. And she was like, since I'm sort of like a scattered and like nonlinear thinker, I of course never thought it was the meds.
Yeah,
and
right.
I'm like, it's anti-anxiety and depression. Why would I have anxiety and depression? Because I take it.
Yes.
And so don't do that, man. Don't do that. So that was my first experience. My wife was like, get the hell off those. You're like, it's changed you into a completely different person. And this doctor was like, it's supposed to be mild. Yeah. Got off those. The color started coming back into life. Things started getting better. So I would say your mindset towards meds being a bit skeptical is definitely always good.
Yeah.
Always, you know, be a bit skeptical and ask questions. Yeah, for sure. Because, man, that was a rough go. And then I was kind of scared away from it for a while until my son, who's now 10, he was 9. This was last year. He's like more ADHD than I was.
Yeah.
And he was just like bouncing all over the walls. But then, you know, like, zoning out, staring at a ceiling for half an hour. Like it was just, and it was driving everyone mad. And it was, our patience was getting tested.
Mm-hmm.
And we started thinking like, okay, let's not think about us. We can handle this. But what about his parents? But what about him? Is it affecting his friendships? you know, are kids rejecting? Because like as an adult, I can hang, I can handle it. And I can say, I can defend myself and go, you know, fuck you. Like I'll go on and find some other friends that are okay with me like this.
Yeah.
But for him, it's like, this shapes who he is. Yeah. This shapes the way that kids treat him. And if they tease him and all that, and I already know it hurts me when people tease me for this stuff. So we ended up looking into it, and I said, well, that my son ain't doing anything that I'm not willing to jump in with him.
That makes sense. Yep.
So that's when it started, and we both kind of did. He's on Ritalin, and I'm on Adderall. Yeah. And Adderall, I'm very cautiously on the very lowest dose that I can think of, and it's good. It's helpful. But it's such a low dose that it is. I'm not that much different. I might ramp up a little bit, but I'm cautiously at like 5 milligrams, which is like super low.
Yeah.
And my son's at 10. Yeah. And the truth be told, it is night and day with Jameson, with my son. It is completely better for him. Yeah. I've not seen the horror stories of like, you know, him like massive emotional swings. He's had very small ones, but dude, it's like it's made night and day difference for him and those around him. And like, I couldn't speak more highly of it. We're cautious about going much higher with his dose too. That's it. That's the story.
Do you feel like it's changed things for you? Is it pretty noticeable for your experience?
I'd say it like in the same way that like alcohol would like take the edge off of, you know, maybe a hard day. It takes the edge off. It seems to get me more where I want to go. I seem to be able to have maybe I ramp up the dose and it's a little better.
Yeah.
But I'm also just like a little bit cautious about like even doing that. I would say, it helps. Oh my gosh, dude. Like we noticed with Jameson when we skip, it's just like, Tony and my wife and I will look at each other and be like, holy shit. Like this is like worse than ever. Yeah,
it's extreme.
Question for you though. I'm really fascinated by the overlap with the more ADHD people I meet, the more I'm like, I find there's like these odd similarities, and I don't know if people are actually asking these questions, but like, do you like to do X or do you like to do X? Do you, for some reason, I find like tweeting to be like so easy because it's like, it's a little tweet. Oh, it's easy. Like I can get it in and out of my mind.
Yes.
And I find
that at first, I'm sorry, I cut you off, but it sounded like when you first said it, I thought you were saying, do you like to do X as in the variable? And I thought you were saying, do you like to do X like ecstasy? And you're like surveying ADHD people for their ecstasy use. It's like, whoa, this turned a weird corner. All right.
This is getting fun. Major here. So, do you like to do X? Do you like to do Y? Finding out that so many similarities. Maybe I should say Y.
Sorry.
The question, I'm trying to remember what the question was again. It was, you got me off the track now.
Oh, you were talking about, is it easier to do tweeting versus other things or?
Oh yeah. So like for some reason, email is like the hardest damn thing for me in the world. You mentioned email and I was wondering like, why is it easy for me to like reply to somebody's tweet? But like email, I know I just have this, like, it's almost like there's this anxiety. It's like, I know I'm gonna have to get into it.
Yes.
I'm gonna have to dive in deep and I have to think hard about how I want to respond. And it literally could be the same exact responses I would do on a tweet, but there's the barrier there of like email is going to be long and it's just this task and it just takes a lot of concentration. And so I'm just like, people will be like, I emailed you 2 months ago, but it's like, I'm really shitty at email.
Yep. Me too. And I think it's something to do with the psychology of, and I actually tell my students like, don't email me, do anything but email me, text me, you know, tweet to me, whatever, direct message. I think it's that email feels like a task, whereas a lot of these other forms, like Slack even to me, feels like a conversation. And so there's like, it feels a little human, feels exciting, you know, you're going to get a response and talk, whereas email feels like doing a worksheet. And anything like that is just incredibly difficult. Yeah. And I know how stupid that sounds, but you can't understand unless you deal with that.
I could carry on the, like, a deep and engaged conversation that continues to get deeper fully engaged for, till I do this with my friends till like 3 a.m. It just doesn't stop.
Yeah.
But, and it's like, if you analyze them after the fact, it's like this huge, ridiculously in-depth conversation they carried on for 4 hours. And my wife will say, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even talk to people that long. Yes. I don't even want to.
Yep.
Whereas, an email, right? Like, it's, I don't know, something about it. It's like, there's gotta be like a guidebook for like design for ADHD people.
Yeah.
Like,
there's gotta be something. And you know what? I just want to, one thing I'm going to say, I thought after we started talking, I thought I'll give a preface at the beginning of the show that's just a general apology for cutting you off. But whenever I'm talking to somebody, I'm not good at it. It's a thing I had to learn about how to not interrupt people when you get excited. But whenever I'm talking to somebody with ADHD, it's 50 million times worse. And so you're bringing out my worst side in that way. So apologies to you and to the listeners. But yeah.
my apologies too. And being somebody that deeply cares about other people, a lot of people will be like, my wife will bring my attention. She'll be like, you do realize you interrupt people all the time. And I'm like,
I know.
It's my brain is off in this other place. And a lot of times it's off in this other place at the same time that it's thinking about what you're saying. And it's so excited about what you're saying that I cut in. And like, if I could say anything about what it feels like to be ADHD, I would say that it feels a lot like take all the foreground noises and take all the noises that are in your internal dialogue and then the actual dialogue that's happening in front of you and now flatten them to have the exact same like audible input and the same. And it's like all these things are happening at once. And that's what's happening when ADHD people, what I read is when they actually zone out, is because the brain is fatigued and it's like trying to take a nap.
Yes.
And that's why caffeine and shit helps, because it flushes blood back into the brain to wake it up again.
Yes. And that's what people don't understand is that that's why the name is really weird, is that for ADHD people, you actually have too much attention. Your brain is so on that you have a really difficult time knowing which things to pay attention to. And that's why the ultimate cure for it is finding something that consumes you with interest. And if you have that, you can focus more than anybody in the world. And so for me, the things that gather, that really grab my attention, I'm super good at. But
I think I have not actually heard it put that way, but I think that's, because the people think like, he just can't focus. And I even say this to my son, like, he just can't focus.
Yes.
He lacks the attention. It's like, bullshit.
Yeah.
You have like superpowers of attention, but the problem is your brain doesn't have the ability to keep up with all of it.
Yes.
So it's this imbalance in that way. And then you just like fizzle.
Yep. And my brain is, in my brain, that's what I try to tell my wife before, is like, just think of like, I don't know what it's like to be in your brain, but I'll tell you, you know, tell my wife, I don't know what it's like to have a normal brain. My brain is like, what about this? What about that? What about this? What about that? You're like, oh, like it never goes away. That's just all the time. And usually there's random thoughts like being hungry and then really deep existential thoughts, you know, deep for me, maybe not profound, but deep in that they're like questioning the universe in the background all the time. And it was like,
I think I was already catching the tip of this iceberg when we first talked. I was like, yeah, Andy's definitely like a type of me.
Yes.
he's like a brother from another mother.
Yeah, dude, I know.
All that's going on at once. You're like, I had an idea for this really cool illustration. And then you're like, oh, I got this idea about like, what if we were all wrong about our human existence and this? And it's all happening at once.
Yep.
And it's very strange. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's tough.
And I do know that people are always like, I don't understand how you have so much creative energy. You always have ideas and you never fizzle out. And this goes back to what you said. I don't want to take meds because like, I am creative because I am who I am. And I live in the brain that I live in. And at some point you're like, I don't want to stop these ideas from happening. And I don't want to fizzle because part of this disorder is actually helping me.
Yep.
It is a disorder. I'm still a little weird. So part of me just thinks that it's like, it's not a disorder. It's just a different kind of brain that is not within the larger percentage of brains.
Yes.
You know?
And that's where I land. The way that I land is like, it's a disorder for this society. In this society, a lot of the things that you value, I suck at. Now, a lot of the things that it's really hard to, I feel like that's the thing about creative pep talk and why I'm so passionate about it is all of these things that for a lot of creative people, they have these weird, this weird type of value that is really difficult to prove and show your stuff. And it requires so much time and energy and direction to get there to where people are like, oh, actually, Andy has something cool to bring to the table. Look at all the stuff he's doing. You know, that I don't actually think that, I think a disorder is a really weird way to call what it is. But yeah, I definitely agree with that. Big shout out to AstroPad. AstroPad is one of our sponsors. AstroPad turns your iPad into a graphics tablet for your Mac. It makes illustration, digital illustration on the go, a breeze. I love AstroPad. I use it in all of my pro illustration work. Thank you, AstroPad, for sponsoring the podcast. Also, big old shout out to Squarespace. Squarespace makes beautiful websites a breeze. I use Squarespace for all my sites. I just put up a new site for my AndyJ.pizza. And here's the thing. I think the purpose of websites, especially for creative people these days, is to make a really fantastic first impression. When they go to checkout to see if you're a pro, you need to wow them with a beautiful site. And that's what I'm trying to do. And that's what I've always been doing with Squarespace. They make it super easy. Go check out Squarespace and use the promo code PEPTALK for 10% off. Thanks, Squarespace. Shift gears a little bit. You talked about one of the main things I want to talk to you about is this idea of kind of, it's about self-actualization, becoming who you really are meant to be or who you really are beyond what you were raised to be, your persona, all that jazz. And you'd mentioned back a few years ago when you started thinking about meds or whatever, that there was a time in your life where you were kind of going outside of your parents' wishes, so to speak, even in minor ways. Right. What did
that? Oh,
this
is like the actual topic of the whole show.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Okay, yeah. So we're going there.
Yeah, right. I just thought it sounded like a decent segue into that topic. So let's go into that.
What did you call it? It's like a hero's journey.
It's the hero's journey. Like,
yeah, the hero's journey, and basically, it's where you cut off from the path that was given to you, and you've got some opposition.
That's a big part of it. It's like it's basically a call to the unknown that requires like saying that's like the first step of the journey is saying no to the path you were given, and it's kind of like Pocahontas, I guess, where she has to marry Kokoam. And she's like, no, I'm going to take a different path. So basically, I'm asking you, what was your John Smith?
Oh, my John Smith. I will be the only one to say that my John Smith was the actual John Smith. No. What a beautiful man. My John Smith.
What started you going down that path of like kind of breaking the tract?
Yeah, so the track for me was I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. Yeah, it was my dad. It was all sort of leave all reasons or sort of like conjecture as to why it all happened. But like,
yeah,
my dad thought he was he homeschooled me. Him and my mom homeschooled me, my stepmom, yeah. And they believed that I was like really good at math. Yep. And that math and accounting was good for me. Like I said, I'll leave out the reasons why. I don't know.
Right.
But they
were like, you just like okay at math when they were teaching it to you or what?
I think I, for some reason, was just like really damn good at the story that I've told myself recently is I'm really good at being curious and picking up new things and just like, my dad taught me to be really damn stubborn and beat my head against a rock until like a solution presented itself, yeah, and to not give up. Yeah. And I think I have a really, really good not give up bone. And so I just got good at it, and all my siblings gave up, and I just got good at it. And they're like, he's a whiz at math. And there was no like understanding per se of like that Raji really loves this stuff. It was more. And just full disclosure, I for some reason naturally grew up loving Disney. My parents, we lived in a home that was very shut off from a lot of different things, but we got to watch Disney movies. And I love those things. And I love drawing. And I love pausing Disney movies and like the characters, like making the characters. But my parents being very religious at that time, that was my path. That was where I was wanting to go. I wanted to be like an animator. And my parents believed, because of some propaganda they were given, that like Disney as a company was like satanic at its core.
Right.
And like, and a lot of animation, anything really mainstream was like super evil at its core. And so there was a moment when my dad threw away all of my drawings and actually literally burned my drawings.
Yeah.
And it's still a memory in my head. And it was a message of like, these are evil, and literally said, look in their eyes, they're evil. And so that was my path, but yet got taken away from me. And then it was like, I think after that, it was like, I was apathetic. I was like, maybe at age 14 or 16, I was like, I love football. Yeah. I want to be a football player. And I was playing football all the time. Once again, the evil creeps in. Yes. My dad tells me you cannot play football because team sports are evil because they're bent on destroying the opponent. And it's not based on humility and teamwork. And I disagree with it. I said, well, Dad, I really want to go to a high school. I looked it up. I could be a homeschooler, but still, be in a high school football team. And my dad told me, if you want to be a football player, then you can move out of my home and not talk to me. And so that was my path. And that was what I, yet again, I tried to reestablish something that I loved. And that again was evil. So, you know, it's no wonder that I was apathetic and went to school for accounting of all things.
I
hate accounting.
Yeah. Golly. Okay. There's so much stuff that I want to unpack. And, before I dive in, I just want to say that, coming from Indiana, coming from, you know, especially extended family, being very religious, I think something that people that don't have that experience don't understand is that I feel like watching all of this stuff happen, because I didn't have those experiences. I feel like my dad is a spiritual guy. You know, he has a faith and a practice and all that, but he's always been a very, like, rational thinker and very pragmatic to couple with that. Now, lots of my extended family, aunts and uncles and all that, I watched a lot of those stories play out in the same way. And I think one of the things that people that haven't experienced that can't understand is that these are like extremely well-intentioned people with beautiful souls that get caught up with the wrong kinds of ideas that are very convincing. And and there's a lot of like psychology on how to kind of get people to in this zone. And so I don't want to, as before, I just wanted to be careful as we dive into this story. I don't want to paint your dad in any light or anything like that. Like, that's definitely not my purpose, but I feel like this story is so powerful that I would, you know, love to kind of dive into the detail, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And just to tack onto that real quick, I have a ton of grace for like where my parents were coming from.
Yes.
A mom, so dad and stepmom raised me, a mom that was literally hearing voices, quote unquote, demonized, hospitalized, pretty tragic little thing. And if I see their hearts right, they were running from something, from what their parents taught them, some evil their parents taught them, and they were just trying. I can see it in my dad now. He's sort of lost all that crazy superstitious stuff. He was just trying to protect me. My story is still real because what I saw as a kid, that sucked.
Yes.
But my dad and stepmom truly were just trying in their own way, with the education handed to them, trying to protect me from a demonic force that they saw happening in our lives.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't think you're disrespecting. I think clarifying that too is really, really good.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So when did the whole burning of the drawings and all that stuff take place? Like, how old are you?
I think I was probably around, it's a little fuzzy. I don't think I've really, for for obvious reasons, not really dug it up much.
Yeah, I apologize. Gosh, but it's such a good story that I think is so powerful. And so, yeah, sorry for prodding at this, but
No sorries. Prod away, prod away. Like I said, I'm an open book.
Yeah.
True. So I think I was probably around 12 or 13. Really being into like drawing the line. I mean, I'm one of the characters like Simba from Lion King. And of course I'm trying to replicate art, right?
Yes, so right.
Trying to replicate what I see and what I like. And so, I want to leave room for other stuff. So let's keep going.
All right. Okay. Now, so that you go through that, all that experience and, you end up kind of getting into you go into accounting, and then eventually you end up getting into computer science, right? Which is a little bit closer to maybe your interests.
I think so. I think building is important to me. I think creating and that having the skill set to do so is really important. Yeah. So sort of meandered, went to a community college, went to accounting, actually flunked a class. That was my first one because I hated it. Yeah. And I never wanted to go. So I don't care if I get an F because, damn it, I guess I wanted to get an F. I hated this.
Yeah.
I stumbled into some computer. I had some weird meeting with a guy on a plane, and he was like, oh, he worked for some big companies. Like, you could make X money. And the way that my dad works is, like, it's all about getting that salary. It was about, you know, establishing that salary. And I was like, okay, well, that's good money. And I think it was, like, $40,000. And I was like, I want to make that money, and what do I do then? Tell me what I do. And he was like, well, we do hire programmers out of your local college. So that's exactly what I did. I went to the programming thing. I did Q Basic. I wrote some weird little funky games. One game was called like Roll Them Dice, Baby. I don't know why it's a great title, but it was the simplest, most horrible game. Did that, went through college. And as I went through college, kind of heard this story once again. You're really good at math. In retrospect, I should have been like, yeah, I'm good at it. Doesn't mean I like it. Yeah. But I got a double major as a result of that. So it was a computer science math double major. Did the whole, overachiever, thesis thing, all that. Did a thesis on creating random fractal landscapes in like 3D geometry. All kinds of like crazy stuff. I could even see looking back, like even in using some of the database, I made a database program, and like I had to style the whole interface. For some reason, I was in a Crazy Taxi, the game.
Yeah.
So the whole thing looked like a taxi cab, like Crazy Taxi, the game. Like for inputting like customer data.
That's good.
So yeah, I mean, I graduated like 23-ish or something.
Yeah.
Took like 5 years to do it. All the while, just I think important for the story, really coming out of flip-flopping in my faith as a Christian. Like I remember a point at which I just was like, I think I'm an atheist. And I was working in a very highly, I was working as a waiter. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of my natural who I was coming out. I thought I was an introvert. But not just an introvert in the sense that we know it now, but I thought that I was like a quiet person.
Right.
And like didn't talk much, stayed in the corner. And that's because I never really interfaced with like society much. I was a homeschooled kid.
Yeah.
The real me begins to come out. I'm hanging out with people, loving people and learning about people and like meeting all sorts of different people with diverse backgrounds and diverse sexualities, diverse lifestyles.
Yep.
And I love these people. These people are my friends. And so, of course, a typical faith situation, it's all black and white, as you think it is. And so you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So then I was just sort of like questioning everything
I just wanted to pause you real quick and just say, you were saying that part of your deconstruction of your faith was the church's or parts of the church's kind of intolerance or hatred for different sexual orientations, so to speak, was like one of the things that caused you to really walk away.
Totally, because I, you as a Christian kid that's raised in a very specified, very version ridiculous of yeah. version of a Christian faith, which is just like, you know, a woman, very gender roles, very like a woman walks in with a dress or a pants on, and they pull her to the side and say, we need you to be wearing a dress.
Yeah.
That just like imagine ridiculous and then go further.
Yeah.
And yeah. so. And so I'm looking into the eyes of these people that are my friends, and like they're not the people that my parents told me they were.
Yes.
They're not the vile sinners that, you know, are just living a, you know, a life away from God, loving people. Like I'm finding that I have a lot of commonality with them. They're very loving and they're very this or that. And yeah. and I'm this is really pitching my belief system, everything that I've been taught. It's really stretching it and breaking it and exposing holes in it. And I would guess the from then on, probably age 20 till now, age 37, I've been exposing holes and patching up holes and trying to see if this is something I still believe in and at which degree, and what if it is like American Christianity, or what if it is just like this weird shit that I was taught that's not even, it's like a cult. Yes. So, yeah. Yep. Yep.
So you're deconstructing all of that and growing up. And so at some point, we get to this point where you go to Disneyland and you're reminded of who you were as a kid, what excited you, all the drawing and all that jazz. Am I skipping too far ahead, or do you want to go?
No,
there?
I think that's really good, because what happened over those years is I was married and almost got divorced.
Yeah.
And then, I had a child and my wife almost died.
Well.
Because she has a blood clotting disorder we didn't know about, and literally find out about it one night. She's pregnant, and the doctor says, this is serious. It's so serious that there's a greater chance she'll die tonight than live.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was all just like a lot of trauma, a lot of things going on all at once. A lot of faith in God was restored then, and sort of a rewriting of my own faith, and sort of
right.
now just to kind of fast forward right into that Disneyland moment, I think that, you know, my wife made it through, and there was so much. I had rewritten my own sort of like relationship with I don't really call it a relationship, but my own beliefs about what God means for us. And I think yeah. that Disneyland, like this is all part of their self-discovery of being like almost as if God was like, okay, I'm rewriting all these false beliefs that were implanted into you because of these idiots. And now I'm going to rewrite the version of you that was when you were a kid, yes. when that got taken away.
Yeah.
And it just kind of all happened and hit. It was like almost as if I had turned off the switch for all those passions because they were evil. And then in that moment, God just like flipped the switch back on and said, okay, come on back. And yeah. that was really cool.
Yes. And actually, I love all of that, because I'm not going to go into super deep detail with all of it, because this is an interview with you and not me. But just to say that, you know, I have a lot of the same kinds of experiences. And one of the things that I think is really beautiful about that is that I think the same thing that's pulling you away from who you were made to be and everything you were grown up in, part of that to go away from home, so to speak, and really deconstruct and walk away is like incredibly difficult. But I think there's always a silver lining of like, you're going to return to the parts of it that were good. Like, you know, you're not going to wipe away your entire past and everything you've ever known and then totally be completely different than everything you've ever expected. I think there is a part of you that after you go through that process of stripping yeah. away, you return to the things that were good about, you know, where you were.
I think that it would be like stupid to think that wouldn't happen, just because like it's too hard to unwire yeah, everything that we've true. Been made to be. I think you go to gone to a lot of therapy and counselors, and I these things, if you want to truly change, like rewrite who you are, it's hard as shit, and yeah. it takes tremendous amount of work.
Yeah.
So I think it is most easy to return back. You know, I definitely kick against the things that I believe that are wrong.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think it's easier for me to return back to a faith in a Christian God.
because you're
wired. But then toss out all the other things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And so that whole process of all that, like, trauma and all that you're going through in early 20s, is kind of the process of stripping away down all to your basic core. And then through that and grappling with all of this stuff, you are almost like, rejuvenated to a more base version of yourself. And this is when you're going on vacation.
Yeah, it's just like all the trappings, you know, we get overloaded as if the backpack just keeps on getting another rock and another pound and another pound, and at some point it's too hard to take another step, and you have to empty it all out again. And like when it's empty, it's like now it's really fun. Now you're back to like I remember even thinking like I'm back to being a kid again, and I think that even if my bio was just like big kid.
I went through the same thing where the past 5 years, I feel like about 5 years ago, I went through like a big stripping back of everything that I was given, and it was really scary, and it freaks you out, and you kind of ask every question about yourself and about your situation and your faith and your everything. And once you get to the other side of that really scary place, there's almost no better place to be, because that's when you feel like you've got that blank canvas and you're ready to put on the real stuff. And I totally, totally relate to that. And that's part of what I know. It's like kind of psychological and whatever, but I feel like, this is the stuff that I've been trying to talk about with the audience through the Creative Destiny series, because I keep saying that so much about being a fantastic artist or creative person is that journey of self-actualization and going through that difficult work so that you can create that stuff that's you on the canvas, yeah, so that other people can see it as a mirror and recognize things in themselves that they've never seen. And there's just all this power in, I feel like for the artist, that's a large part of your job, is to do the really tough work that then becomes, you know, the stuff that you make, and then other people can enter through that, you know?
That's like much deeper than I probably would be capable of articulating. But I will say this, like that kind of like triggered me. I was like, wow, like the journey I've taken over the last, you know, of course, new hardships, but the journey I've taken over the last like 6 years has certainly connected me, put me through the fire, but connected me with my fellow like man and woman in deeper ways than I ever have. And I never really thought about how that works in the design and art world, but like, isn't that what art is about? Like, and design too is about connecting or being
to
so
humanity.
To humanity, that you understand that like the button works better here because that's how humans work, or this emotional state or this imagery paired together works well because that's how most humans connect.
Yes.
But that's like part of understanding yourself shines the light on understanding them.
Exactly. And I feel like when I was 20, 22, and you'd have these really phenomenal artists that had done that work come in and say, you need to put yourself into the work and really be authentic. And I think at the time, I have so much clutter, all that stuff that's been given to me, just like you were talking about with the heavy backpack, all of this stuff. And I feel like I even had a sense of like, I can't put this stuff in there. And it was I don't know. Even looking back, I feel like there was a intuition there that was like, all the things that I claim to be aren't me. So I don't really feel comfortable putting myself, so to speak, into this work, which is just, I don't know. So that journey was massive for me. So let's talk about, you go to vacation, and I just want to know the story of the internal dialogue, how all of that starts coming out where you're thinking about making art again, because I can imagine there's a lot of self-talk and psychology and all kinds of stuff as that's happening.
There honestly wasn't.
Really?
Like, there, yeah, here comes the deep answer. Like I said, it was literally like a switch got turned on. I will tell about sort of like I'm very sort of like emotional sensitive. So yeah. I think a lot of times the reason that I make decisions, they happen through like emotional experiences.
Yeah.
But It basically was, I had my son on my shoulders, and it was a full, wonderful day at Disneyland. And, you know, as a kid, I would go to Disneyland and I would just eat it up, man. I would go to the little stores and I would grab the books, and the books were like $100 hardbound, and I was like, I can't get it. So I just sit there and just read it and look at it and flip through the pages. And so this was 7 years ago, and I had become a designer. It's not that I don't like design. I do. But there was just that, like, that me, that passionate, that, like, this was me, what was lost. It was just all day, I think. And this whole, it was a 5-day Disneyland trip, and this was toward the end of the trip. And I was in the middle of Main Street, and it was the fireworks show. It's already, you're emotionally a little bit exhausted and physically exhausted, but you're so happy. And I've got my son. I believe it was 7 years ago, so it would have been probably Jackson, maybe Jameson, on my shoulders. And I'm looking up at the, you know, looking up at the fireworks. And it was just like all in one big, like, whoosh moment, where I was just like as if it was a voice just saying, like I connected so much with the growing up. And even as a nearly in a divorce, like as a 24-year-old man, like with the Lion King story of that one moment where it was like the father Mufasa comes out of the clouds and he was like, you're not who you were meant to be. Like, remember who you are. Super emo. Yes, but like, I'm tingling right now.
Yes.
And so it was like that. It was like, you are not who you were meant to be. You need to remember who you are. And it was just like flick. And then it was like, I got to start drawing. I got to start drawing. And it was like this belief again, this belief in myself again. Like, it was as if as a kid, I was told, you can't do this. Nope, you can't do this. You want football? Nope, you can't do this. Nothing you can do is good. Yeah. Here, let me show you what you can do that is good. And it was this switch that flipped it back and said, but you can. Yeah. But it was okay. And it was just, at that point, the belief and the self-actualization, the realization that I can do it. Was there, and I remember picking up a pencil, just being like, I hadn't drawn since I was 13.
Man, that's crazy.
17 years of not doing something that I did every day for as much as I can remember.
Yeah. Did it come back pretty quick? Did you feel like natural getting back into it?
No. I remember just being like, man, that is a shitty drawing. I remember just being like, what? I have stumps for hands. Like, I remember looking at my drawings from when I was like, you know, at 13. I was like, shit, I was not bad. I was on the path and I really sucked. Yeah.
Yes. And actually, I just want to speak to this, and this may be just, you know, us weird, grew up in faith culture, also grew up at Disney World, Disneyland, and all that jazz talking. But
like five people. Right.
but I feel like in that same way, as I have like entered my own journey, grappled with tough questions, made my own decisions about things, these classic stories that are just retellings of myths and stories we've always told as people, just things exactly like The Lion King or whatever. I know that we both have bonded over Moana on Twitter. But these stories, all of a sudden, the classic kind of stories that we tell over and over again have just come to life. And for me, when I engage with those things now, having gone through or feeling at the heart of a journey, they really do move me and they really like mean something to me. I don't know. I think if you numb those questions and that aching thing that's telling you to go try that thing that you wanted to do or whatever it is, if you numb it and you deny it and you all that stuff, the stories that people have always told won't do anything for you because you won't recognize the same human battles. But as you enter it, all of a sudden, and of course, connecting with that humanity is going to make you so much better at creating those stories yourself, right?
I totally agree, but I always told you I hated like one-way monologues, and now I'm really curious because this is still kind of awkward for me, like the being asked questions and answering. Yeah. And of course, you're being like a gracious, wonderful host, but like now I just can't. I gotta know, like, what was your thing? Like, I don't distill it how you see fit, but like, yeah. I wanna know, like, what. I'm curious. I want to know what you went through. Why you
I'm
went
not
through
trying
it.
To be so cryptic, but I just don't, you know, I talk for like so many hours on the internet that I'm sensitive
yeah,
to
but
going
time
deep.
You
but,
get, but this time you got the question back, so like it's just rude to not answer.
So, you know, I'll give you the short version, but I grew up in a Christian house, and we went to church off and on. My dad's faith is definitely important to him. That's definitely a thing. But I grew up a lot like my mom, who was a drug addict, and she was not in the house. So I think it's also really interesting between you and I that we share growing up in our dad's home, which is a pretty unusual story. I kind of realized later after the fact, you know, like it's the dad that leaves. So yeah, so I can definitely relate to that. It's a different journey, but I never really, for a long time, I'm a lot like my dad, but I didn't realize that until I was grown up. And my mom was the artist, and she's the one that has ADHD, and I kind of, everybody told me that I was going to be just like her. And as you get to be 13 and you find out who she really is, you're like, oh, I'm doomed because this is my path, and I'm going to be a disaster of a person and be a drug addict and all this stuff. And so by the time, I did do a lot of drugs and stuff in high school, and, you know, had no path, and I was just the goofball and all that. And then when I got into art, I started taking life a lot more seriously, and I think it was kind of through that I started to get into my dad's faith, and kind of had the conversion experiences around 18, and then the first 5 years of my 20s were pretty orthodox Christian situation, you know, going to church and all that jazz. And then I think.
Can I ask real quick what flavor? Just because there's so many similarities here. What flavor? I actually had the fear of becoming my mom, but I actually had the fear of becoming my mom, like 6 years ago. Right.
Yeah, I get that.
What flavor of Christianity?
This was. I mean, I don't think that. I think my gut impulse to reject. So much of it from the start meant that I never dove really deep into any denomination because I was always surrounded by a billion. I feel like because we moved a lot, you know, I was in England and the flavors over there are completely different. Like, I feel like I never felt a home that I could call my own. So I always was just kind of piecemealing between non-denominational. And when I was over in the UK, there's a lot of like charismatics and all that jazz over there. And so I witnessed every kind of walk, basically. I don't feel like I ever dove deep into any particular sect of it. And then
when you came into it at age 18, right? Like, at this point, like, I feel there's a lot more like victim, like, I feel like kids of a very harsh religion are more victimized when they're like, you know, just fed it when they're, you know, spoon fed it when they're like born and then older. You're 18, you've experienced a few things, you've done some drugs, like you're starting to form your own mindset, and then you jump back in. I can see why you might like kind of cock your head a little bit and go like, I don't know if I agree.
I think I did get hardcore in that. You know, I've come to realize that like religion can be super good for behavior modification and getting yourself on to a respectable kind of situation. And for me, I think that it was all of those things, and I really needed all of that at the time. But, and at the same time, I was this vulnerable person who was desperate to not have a super failed life. And, I think there was also, if you go to any church, that's not fair, but if you go to lots of churches and you express sincere, deep interest interest, you're going to be handed so many burdens, whether that's volunteering or just all kinds of frickin' theological baggage and just all kinds of stuff. And so I feel like from ages 18 to 23, I was just like a student of all of these different types of people that, you know, some definitely did not deserve the respect and authority that I allowed them to have in my life. And so there was all that. And then I think when I was probably about, so I'll be 31 tomorrow. But when I was about 25, I feel like I went into hardcore deconstruction, probably spent quietly really having whatever my faith had been was just gone. And it was, I don't even know what it was other than just like allowing myself to ask questions that I hadn't allowed myself to ask, and just started pulling threads that I felt as a responsible person, I needed to ask those questions. Like, you know, all the things about, all these teachings. And so I went through a period where it was just like, whatever that feeling was of faith just completely disappeared for a good 2 years. And then I think I slowly reconstructed a worldview that I'm sure just makes Orthodox American Christians like shudder with disgust and fear. But
your thoughts are coming like right out of my, I think our year, you know, year wise, our path, I'm probably a little bit further down, meaning I've done a lot of this deconstructing over the last few years, but yeah, I would just say that about my faith now, is I would just say, for those that are listening, here come, or I would just say to you, don't worry. Well, you can go ahead and DM me, but it would just be like, but this doesn't work. Yeah. And
that's one of the reasons why I've talked really cryptically on the podcast about it, because it's such a complicated issue for me. And to me, it's weird, through all of that stuff, faith in its own way is a giant part of my existence now.
Same here.
Probably more than it ever has been.
So I would say same, totally same. It still permeates my everyday, the way that I think about life, the way that I think about people, the way that I love people, what I think I'm called, even in my terminology, like called to do. I would just say that, definitely deconstructed a lot. And I think, to be respectful for those that are really listening, and they're like absolutely in love with their faith right now. That people are complex. People have nuanced, complex stories. True. I mean, I just went through talking about like all this crazy shit and about all this demonizing, all this stuff that happened. Like, this shapes my worldview in a way that's different than your worldview. And also, the state of American Christianity, as I know it, is like incredibly different. You go to one, it's different.
Oh, totally true. Yeah, absolutely.
It's just
true.
As different as saying like I'm a bodybuilder and meeting another bodybuilder and saying they're the same. It's very different.
Yes. Yeah. It's so exactly true.
Your flavor could be very helpful.
And that's and that's why I am really sensitive to the topic, because I think especially in America, it's such a divisive issue, and my own experience is so unique. And I think the best way that I've described it, what the difference between before and now, is this thing that Alan Watts says about faith isn't supposed to be clinging to something. It's supposed to be letting go of control. And I think that's the difference between, you know, Andy 18 to 25 to Andy 28 to 31, is my faith is about letting go more than it is clinging to specific things. And it's really good for my mental health, I think.
I've with my new form of faith, which is what people would say about it, we haven't actually fully defined it in any way, which is good. I would say the same thing too. It has become about letting go. It has become about realizing that we're all a little bit, you know, tweaked, a little bit messed up. But it's definitely given me great responsibility and like taking ownership of saying, but I can still fix it and I can still work on it, but just get get that, like, everyone's struggling with stuff. Like, the empathy level has definitely skyrocketed with people, and understanding that, like, we all are come from different backgrounds. We have different opinions about life, and these opinions and what our parents have done to us, they really hurt us or help us. And I don't know. I would say it's definitely in, what my faith has done for me now is definitely helped to create a culture of brother, true, like what I feel is like true brotherhood and sisterhood with everyone, not with just fellow people of the same faith.
I completely agree. I feel like when I went through my deconstruction phase, I never loved people as much as I have since then. And that changed. I don't know. That's a good sign for me. And let me ask you this, and then we can kind of shift gears a little bit. But if you're cool with that, I want to ask you, what led you? Because I imagine this, all this stuff with your dad and those experiences and everything were obviously traumatic, probably burnt in all kinds of different things into the neural pathways into your mind. What was the experience that led you to be open to going back down roads like art? Like, I know we talked a little bit about this, but I just want to, like, one of the things I've been talking a lot about is, like, you know, the conversations you have with yourself to end up taking, to find your path, and all of the things that stop you from doing that. And I just wonder, even before, maybe when you're going through the trauma with family stuff, or even before that with college, you know, there's a thing, there's in your mind, let's just go back, let's just go to Moana real quick. The dad saying, don't go to the ocean. Like, don't go to the ocean. To go to the ocean, something has to happen internally where you get a courage to say, I'm going to do it my own way, even though I was convinced that it was wrong. I wonder, how did that shape, how did that dramatic transformation happen in your mind? Does that make sense? Is that a question that is coherent?
It's coherent. It's hard to like, hard for me to, one thing about my brain that I know is that, like, there's not a clear pathway through it. Like,
it's a lot of little things a lot of times.
Yeah, that's true. And it's like, I don't know if I also one thing I've learned through counseling is, like, trying to actually give myself a break and time to separate to like actually process and solidify and put, like, in some concrete, some thoughts about what do I think about what's happening right now? What do I think about what the way that I'm feeling? And it was always just feelings before. And so
I'm exactly the same. So I totally relate to that. Anyway,
it's a weird one, and it's good to learn. I'm actually really valuing the logical side, if I can get there, of those things. I think it's really helping to change me. I think what got me to that place, if I can, right now what I'm feeling got me to that place was, at that point in my life, I had already kind of, like, went off the rails with regards to where, you know, my dad told me not to go to college. Right. I went to college.
Right.
You know,
so
I was already making, like,
before that. Yes. Right.
There were, like, micro rebellions, so to speak, like very small little, like, nope, I'm going to do this. Nope, I'm going to do this. And I think my internal dialogue was just a little bit stronger. And then that just the constant realization, I think, that, like, every time I would break down and, like, sob about some of these things, or, like, get into an emotional place about, like, what dad did with those things or what mom did, I started to realize, I think I finally saw, first of all, that my parents weren't right all the time, but I went to this spiritual inner healing thing, which I'm going to go ahead and swear by this one.
Yeah.
There was, like, this, it was this funky thing, but basically I realized that I had held all this bitterness against my dad. Yeah. I had held all this, like, angst against my dad for, like, you stopped me. You kept me from what I wanted. Like, you did this to me. I think that was a huge catalyst for it all. When I was at that spiritual inner healing thing for 2 weeks, at the end of it, I remember just, like, sobbing, and it was okay. So put your blinders on. It's kind of weird, but basically, like, there was this guy that sort of acted on behalf of my dad, because we were sort of doing heart work, and he said, "What is it that you would want to say to your dad and say it to me?"
Yep.
And so I said, why did you take this away from me? Why did you not see a little boy that needed this and this? And why didn't you know that this wasn't that I loved? Why did you call these things evil? Blah, 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 blah. Why did you take my dreams away from me? And then, you know, sort of this guy acts as on behalf of my dad and gives me a hug and we cry. And he's just like, I'm sorry. Mm. And it's not the real deal, but it definitely like broke something loose in me where I was like, I let go. I remember always thinking about my dad and being pissed off about my dad.
Yeah.
And then, and my siblings too. And I remember viscerally like months later, my brother being like, why aren't you pissed off at dad about this? And I'm like, I don't know. I can see the good that he was trying to do. It was as if that forgiveness, and of course, this is the part of my faith that I wholly adhere to,
yeah,
in letting go, in talking about what you were saying, letting go, forgiving for what he did. I was able to start understanding, to see it with grace, to see him as a human, to see him as just me grown up a little bit with all my flaws and all my mistakes. Yeah. And I think that gave me license to just go, it's okay to do it on my own now. It's okay. It's like, yeah, he did, you can too. You're no different than him. He's not this monolithic, like, dictator, you know, like, because he punished very hard. Like, there was a lot of fear associated with that. And I saw my dad as a real dude, just a regular dude like me, filled with failure, filled with wonderful things. Yes. And I could start to see the things that he did good. And that just kind of empowered me, I think, gave me the ability to like just start asking myself the questions, start doing that dissection. So,
man, that is that's such an amazing story. I could take that a billion different places, but I'll just, you know, it sounds like you said that, I think I was kind of assuming, and I think a lot of us assume that these things that we fill our backpacks up with are all the things that they did to us and all the wrong and all this stuff, all the ideas that were given to us and we fill up our backpack, but really it's all the stuff that we're holding on to and not forgiving. And it's a different, it's kind of a opposite way that I expected that to go. And I think it's really profound. And I do, and you know, I think however you do that work, I think one of the big takeaways is that you had some processes to process this stuff out and actually hit it head on. And that gave you the ability to start fresh and start building and make your own mistakes and choices. That's awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I can't believe that initially when you asked that, I was like, not really. This is how my mind just like hides things.
Yeah.
I guess it would be like, you would think it would be like, F you and I'm off and I'm doing this. But like, it was quite a different story. And I do think that you're right in the sense that no matter how you do it, no matter how you process it, and this would resonate with even newer stories, would be have people and have systems in your life that you can do the deep work with, and don't be afraid of diving into that like internal darkness inside of you.
Yeah.
Because, and it is weird. It is weird that like, yeah, my dad did wrong, but oftentimes it's like, if I could have given myself advice at age, you know, 17, it would have just been like, hey man, like, it's okay. Like that was scared. That was scared. And he didn't know what to do. And he thought these things were evil, but like, it's cool. It's cool. And like, don't worry. Like, you could still make the decision to do that. But like, we build these things up as so dramatic in our minds. And they're like, as little kids, because they're our little kid brain, they're monsters. They're like, yeah, they're huge, yeah, and they're scary. And we don't go back there. We don't go into that closet. And, literally, I had a few talks with my dad where I actually told him, like, I remember on a hunting trip, it was not a big drag out knockdown thing. We're on a hunting trip and I just turned to him and I go, hey dad, and we're like laughing, and I don't even know how this came out. I just go, remember when you burned my drawings? And he goes, yeah, because they said they were evil. I said, yeah, that really hurt me, dad. That really hurt me. And that's as much as it was. And he goes, I know, and I'm sorry. Shouldn't have done that.
Oh my gosh.
But that was it. That was it. It was not like I hated my dad for 10 years. Like, that was it.
Man. That is just amazing. I'm glad that first of all, I'm really, really thankful that you would share all this stuff. And, you know, I think that it's all really powerful, and that's just amazing. Man.
Now I'm like super emotional. I never really, see, this is my brain. Like, I never really did a full inventory. I never really walked through the, and sort of like boxed the things up and put the labels on and said what it was.
Yes. Man, you went through the deep work and you processed all that stuff. And this is the thing I've been encouraging people with, is all of that stuff is then relevant. All of that health and that work and owning your journey as a human is so impactful in the way that you make your creative work. Because had you not, if you had just done what your dad said and kept in the box and stayed in that lane and became an accountant or even just went into computer science or whatever, you wouldn't be doing all the stuff that you're doing now, and you wouldn't have had that moment at Disneyland, and you wouldn't be drawing and making all this amazing stuff. And
I think there's certainly something to like making, like, a cheesy phrase, I don't even want to do the lemonade thing, but like, right, just like taking like the Phoenix thing, like there's something, yes, to taking, or even maybe not being that dramatic. I think that's something I'm learning, is like not being so damn dramatic.
I haven't learned that, that's for sure.
I'm learning it. Like, it's kind of reflected in that little comment of just going to myself and be like, hey, yeah, you know, dad made a mistake. And like, he was scared, you know, he was scared. Like, just trying to like dumb it down to like not be so horrific. And I think that, you know, like often, like, I can look back and go, you know what? Like, it wasn't what I wanted at the time. Yeah. But you know what? I learned how to program and I learned how to build some shit, and I got really excited about it. And that's changed. It's certainly thrown me into a different thing, but who's to say that I can't make something amazing with what I'm on?
Yes.
Like, these are different tracks, but it doesn't mean these tracks don't lead somewhere good either.
So that's fantastic. I want to segue into something else that I want to talk to you about. One of the key kind of principles that I've been talking about through this whole process is this idea of ultimate Spider-Man is made up of both his supernatural spider bite and then also his like normal background in science, so that he can like create a web slinger and all of this jazz. And I keep encouraging people to like own their entire story. And yeah, maybe they found this new supernatural gift that they have to draw or make music or whatever, but it's the way that you relate it to your whole story that makes you different and differentiates you. And I wondered, I see that in your own story. You have this kind of explosive moment with illustration, but I definitely think that the Raji that everybody knows and why you stand out is your history is so different as an illustrator, and it's the way that you combine that natural path with this supernatural love that ends up making this completely different portfolio. Would you agree with that? Does that feel true to you?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. I don't even know if I know what natural path means.
Just means, I'm speaking in like cryptic tone. Here's what I mean. I mean, like, all the being a developer and knowing all of this, like, stuff that you learned before you had this, like, supernatural breakthrough with illustration again, that's why you get to do all of the stuff that you do. It's the combination of both of those things.
No, I'm very thankful for it. Like, I'm very thankful for, and I don't adhere to the whole like, well, you're a right brain thinker. I don't adhere to any of that. I don't, you know, even in like taking ADHD meds, I don't really adhere to I don't adhere to a lot of black and white thinking about really anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't think like meds are right for anyone or everyone. And I don't think ADHD is really, I don't know if it's a disorder or disorder brought on by the fact that we are in this society and we're
in a broken machine and we're not the broken parts. Like, maybe the working parts are the one that screw up the broken machine. Like, you know, that's a totally different way of looking at it. But
exactly. I think that's how I'm wired. And so, and I think I'm wired eternally optimistic. Although I've been through a few rough moments, I am wired very optimistically, very hopeful, and very forgiving for like seeing people, seeing their struggle, seeing that, like, seeing myself in them, seeing equality there. And I would just say, I totally think that, like, hey, different track, but like, I got all these cool skills, and what can I, you know, it's like, I'm on an island with a hammer, you know, a hacksaw and a blowtorch, maybe not the tools I wanted initially, but like, who the hell's to say what it was supposed to be anyway, or how it would have been if I would have gone back and, you know, just had the hacksaw. So who knows? But yeah, I'm thankful for it. And I think that, you know, I can cobble something together with these tools.
Yes. And I mean, it's very unusual. Like, I don't think, and maybe that's just my own, you know, blinders that I don't see all this, but I don't feel like I know a lot of illustrators that have the same skills as you. And those tools mean that you're creating really, really different things. Does it feel like that to you?
It does. It does. I think that it's inextricable, and I think that it's probably unknown to me. Like, I really don't know what it. I don't know my edge, or like, or anything I may have that's different or unique. Yeah. I think that I'm pretty simple, like my dad in that way. Like, I sort of just put my head down and build shit, like because fun to build stuff. It's, and so I would just say that, yeah, it's, it definitely seems though that, that there is something there. There's something to having those skill sets all intertwined and yep.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. All right. I have taken up, an ungodly amount of time from you.
But it's so fun. I knew this conversation was going to be like insightful. I knew it from when we were in Memphis. I even feel like I, even though I talk so much, you like, I kind of put some puzzle pieces together that I hadn't quite put together. So
Me too, man. That it was a very kind of fortuitous encounter when we kind of met at the food truck line.
It was so short too.
I know.
It was like a 5-minute conversation, or 10 maybe, because the line was longer.
But yeah.
Like, that was about it. It was more toward the end, was it?
Yes, it was more toward the end. And I was feeling the conference fatigue of interacting with so many personas and putting on personas that you try so hard not to do, but you just end up getting into this rut where you're, you know, it's just, conferences are amazing, but sometimes, some point in a conference, I will have a little bit of conference fatigue and feel like, man, I just need to have like a really authentic conversation. And you came along right at that second, and we just instantly started bonding over, struggles.
There was just
ADHD and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
It was just instant bondage. I mean, it was not bondage. We were bonding. No, it was totally that. I felt the conference fatigue too, which is exactly why we often will just kind of go off to a room. I know a lot of people do that. They go off to a room and just kind of, just because, and I think it's well-intentioned, but a lot of people will be like, oh, I know you from blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of like a...
Yeah, it's not...
Everybody's just trying to get to know each other.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just inevitable. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And yeah, so I'm thankful for it though. You're going to be there in Memphis?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I saw that you're going to be... You're speaking?
Good. Yeah, wish me luck.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Good luck. And I will be there. I'm going to have a table and I'm going to try to take a back seat a little bit. I was kind of... you know, on stage for 2 years, and I just need to, I still want to be there and hang out and do all that jazz. But, hey, let's go to quickly. I had a ton of other things I want to talk to you about, obviously, but we're just going to have to do a round two sometime. And, let me just quickly do the lightning round. And the first thing that I would ask you is, what is the best piece of unsolicited advice that you would give just general people about following their creative career? Like, is there anything that you just think this is a principle that you just take to heart and it plays out in your career all the time?
Yeah, I'm sure you ask me tomorrow and be totally
I mean that, yeah, I mean it doesn't have to be the best ever. That's probably not the best way to frame it, but just like, what's one of the attitudes or core values that you bring to the table that you feel like this is a big part of my, what's good about my career?
Actually, I do have some advice. I would just say that, like, often what I see in people is like this, once again, is this black and white thinking of, I'm either in it and I'm chosen and I'm the one, or I'm not and I'm over here and I'm unhappy. I would just say, be as happy as you can be in the current job that you're in, and do as good a damn job as you can. But realize that most of, like, you seeking after your heart and your goals and this and that, I didn't get taught design at school. I became a designer later because I liked it and I decided to add this onto my daily routine. In learning that, I can't speak enough to the value of, like, putting on your horse blinders and just doing the work, doing the work. If you're passionate about, like, you know, free range, you know, knitting or whatever the hell you like, just do it. And, just do it. And just do it in the evening. Do it like, yeah. Manage your life. Take like, oh, your friends want to go out and drink tonight. I get that that's fun. But like, how many times have you done that this week? Okay. Like save a night, save an hour out of the day, do that every day. Save an hour, save an hour, save an hour, sketch, draw, knit, do whatever, you know, be a horticulturist, do the thing that you want. Strangely enough, before you know it, you'll be where you want to be. But the black and white thinking never helped me. Never, ever just think, oh, I'm a plumber and I want to be a designer, so I can never do that because I am a plumber. No, you're not. You're a guy that plumbs or a girl that plumbs, and you're going to be a designer, and you're just going to like make the time, make it work. Yes.
And that's so good. That's such a good piece of advice. It's something I talk about this all the time on the podcast, the idea of like the black and white dual thinking kind of thing and all the problems that it creates for you. One of them being you're not either stuck it. And even if it's in design, I feel like I meet a lot of people that work in an agency or work in a day job that they're not thrilled about. And they look at the people out in freelance world and they think that day job equals hell, freelance equals heaven. And it's just this black and white thing. And I'm always like, none of that's true. Like, you're always on the journey. There's always ups and downs. And then even in that way, it sometimes for people, it's do one part-time, do the other one part-time. That's a totally third way of thinking about it that's not black and white. And that black and white just creates so many problems.
One, I would say based on what we talked about, often like just the overarching story here is like that we just talked about, which is oftentimes like we're our own worst enemies. We're the ones that are holding ourselves up. And so think your own way out of this. Think your own way out of this situation.
Yes.
I'm not going to be the person that says you can do anything. I understand that there are single moms with six kids that are the story is very real. I don't adhere to a lot of fake talk out there, but I do know that when I've made a lot of jumps and done things, it's been in the middle of crisis. It's been in the middle of, you know, having three kids. It's been in the middle of being married and being a single income, but I've still reached for things. And maybe it's not the thing I wanted as a kid, but like I've reached for something and it's been really fun.
Yes, that's so good. That's really, really good. All right, man, I'm not going to take any more of your time. I just completely had a blast having this conversation. It's going to go down in the Creative Pep Talk history books for sure, and I'll be looking forward to doing this again sometime, man.
Dude, thanks so much. It's been honestly more fun than I thought it would be, and the conversation was super great, not because I talked a lot, but also the questions and I think the connectivity with you. So loved it. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Appreciate it so much.
All right. Well, I hope that you really enjoyed that oversharing from me, especially. I wouldn't put that episode out if I didn't think there was tons of real value to the connection between personal lives and health and our journeys and the creative work that we do. I think that this episode is a fantastic illustration of how these things are deeply connected and how you can develop and work in your personal life to also be the best creative that you can be. I just want to deeply, deeply thank Raji for coming on here and just sharing so much of his story and being so open and generous with that. I'm sure that there are thousands of people that will listen to this that will get something that they really, really need right now from that generosity and that vulnerability. Raji, thanks, man. You are a good friend, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Memphis at Creative Works. If you guys want to go see Raji and Justin talk and hang out and eat barbecue and do all that jazz, go sign up at creativeworks.co. All right. Thanks, guys, for listening, and I will be back next week with more pep. Now, before we go, let me just say thanks. Thanks to Yoni Wolf for the theme music and his band Y. Thanks to Nate Utesh and his band Metavari for all the other sweet tunes. Thanks to Alex Sugg for editing this podcast so beautifully. And thanks to all of you guys for listening. Until we speak again, stay pepped up.